Chapter 11. Still Falling.
Ugh, was really all Sean could think of saying.
What?
A local outrage tore into his earhole. By all the atoms of sweet Democritus, desist and remove of yourself from me, ye idiot of dimensions diminutive.
Sean attempted to do as instructed, but trying to stand made just about everything worse because he was not only on top of an offended someone, but by leaving the lap of the same verbally visceral someone, he found himself immediately skating on a laminar flow of skittish apples, none of which were rebels to the third law of obstinacy. After falling on his offended interlocutor for something between the fourth and eighth time, depending on where the line is drawn between slip and fall, he perchanced to recall what had happened to bring him to this situation. On this prompt, he inverted his strategy and lay still and looked up. Just as he hadn't fully unanticipated, no tower at all, leaning or otherwise, only an old apple tree. Bing, or rather schlup, went up a memo note of sorts inside Sean's head.
Excuse me, sir,
he hazarded to his wrestling companion, a thin young man in his early 20s.
You wouldn't happen to be Sir Isaac Newton, would you?
Without the minimal refraction from your ineruditeness, sirrah, our pattern of replication lies securely centred on a most perfunctory negative.
Sean used a simple ah to verbalise the sudden truncation of his previous line of thought. After a further while of renewed pushing, voluntary and involuntary cycles of separation and reuniting, colourful complaining and space clearing enough to stand, the young man said,
"Albeit the actio and conditio of benightenment are not wholly extraneous to mine idle fantasies."
"Eh?" said and thought Sean to celebrate his melee extricus.
"Isaac!"
shrilled in upon them a mature woman's voice from the stone-walled cottage nearby.
"Isaac, doesn't just look upon young apples, young man. Wherefore art thou thoughts attending? Divine inspiration?"
"Sorry, mumsy,"
called the young Isaac Newton, as he gathered up the apples that had fallen to the ground and put them in a large basket.
"Shall I help you?"
offered Sean.
"Mostly decent of you. By the long-lost book of the measurer, what is this?"
He held up the apple on which the watch was strapped.
"How solitary."
He took the watch off, and before Sean could say anything, had pocketed it, and was heading towards the farmhouse, the basket completely forgotten. Sean picked it up and pursued the long-haired youth in his lacy velvet costume. As they entered the door to the comfortable farm cottage, Newton's mother was in mid-rebuke.
"Of all the flea-bit excuses I'm a-heared in my time! The great plague! Oh, to be sure it'd be great, great for layabouts who but seek excuse to avoid of the work. A plague this, a plague on yonder, all fall down, like to us a ruddy London bridge. Next thou wilt be telling me all London town be aflame. Indeed, ye be just shirking work, young man. But martyr mea."
"Don'st thou but martyr mea me. Mumsy will do just fine. And if thou canst ne'er abide that, try honoured mother. For to love of Mr. Biggie, I'm like to swear that every fourth word you utter be Latin."
"It's all the rage in Cambridge, mumsy. They're called Latin quarters."
"Oh, I would fay have it if thou wouldst not drop thine ease in so like a manner. This modern slang is terrible. Who be this?"
She indicated the straggly-looking boy of about 18 Sean was occupying, and she had only just noticed.
"I am not possessed of that knowledge. He did fall out of a tree, in terram cadere, directly atop of me. Assume, did I, he was but one of our fruit-pickers.
Never have I on him eyes laid afore nows. Clear thee off before I put the hedgehogs on thee."
"Hedgehogs?" asked Sean. "Don't you mean dogs?"
"More the spikier, more the hard to remove off the one, and never a want to bury one's soup bones. Friend and protector of women beeth the old hedgehog. Be off with ye before I set one on ye."
Sean doth bide a retreat. Literally at a now what proverbial crossroad, Sean looked up, and then for variation down, the various road branches at the copious ye olde English countryside.
Fizzybites, audio cues, and olfactors galore attested to the furious purity of the pre-industrial age. Fields of stuff growing vigorously and unassisted by contaminants, freshly baled hay, some scattered farmhands in regulation smocks, and straw hats, chickens, ducks, pigs, sheep, and some cows as scenic movie extras, seem to be the only contenders for the next step, until...
Psst!
A cliché asserted itself leafily from the midst of a hedge. Hello? Engaged Sean, feeling both a little foolish and possessed of little left to lose. He heard again,
Psst! Over here!
The hedge midst expanded on its theme.
Yes, can I help you?
Inquired Sean directly to the vegetation, hedging to politeness, so to speak.
Sean!
Hoarse whispered a female voice.
It's us, Jenny and Pal.
Jenny! Pal!
Called Sean and ran around to greet them on the far side. Hello, intoned Pal unenthusiastically from inside the form of a middle-agey country gent, handsomely attired in wig and stockings. But what are you doing here? Sean asked, amazed and thankful, after he had been embraced by Jenny, who was herself occupying a matching beautiful country gentry lady. Inspiring, replied Pal, then added for maximum unnecessity, what else? Something you wouldn't even know how to begin. Jenny was squeezed into a very fetching country dress, and just what it was fetching were very difficult not to notice.
Oh, Sean, it's so good to see you.
We're both glad you escaped Cesare Borgia, aren't we, Pal? There was a telling gap between the question and the answer, something akin to that between a multi-legged hairy something and its victim. Yeah, right. Giving this as generous an interpretation as could be squeezed out of the laws of sense and sensibility, Jenny hugged Sean a second time, causing him dual embarrassment and temporary deafness.
You see, Pal is pleased as well.
But what are you doing here? Stammered Sean, himself hardly able to contain his joy at finding himself with his old friends he had last seen vanish from the haunted house at a moment of chronic peril. We're trying to get Isaac Newton to see a falling apple and be inspired to discover gravity, like it says in all the school books. She paused and bit her lip.
Or something, but he's just not getting it.
Pal kicked a stone sulkily. I still say he doesn't need an apple. Let's just trip him up, or string him upside down from a tree and threaten to cut him loose unless he comes around to thinking our way. No, Pal, it is not the time for a string theory. If we want things to return to normal, we have got to get him inspired in the classical way.
I'm afraid that's too late. I let him get the watch, admitted Sean.
You what? Exploded Pal. You little chronovirus. Here we are, a whole month we've been here, hiding behind hedges, up trees, throwing apples at Newt Boy at every opportunity, he always missing them, or using them to practice his leg spin, while he moans to the chickens about their mutual lack of opportunity for inspiration. And just when we think we're about to make a breakthrough, you come along and hand him a piece of turn-of-the-21st-century technology. He took it. I didn't give it to him. It doesn't matter, you hoppy little plague carrier. With that watch, the timeline risks going haywire. Haven't you worked that out yet?
Jenny reproached Pal.
Pal, now we've talked about this. We agreed that the watch may be causing a disruption, but we can't be sure. That's why we came here, to 1666.
Newton has been here in his family home in Lincolnshire for 6 months because the plague has reached Cambridge, and the university where he is an undergrad is closed.
And that's not my fault either, began Sean.
Nobody is saying it is, Sean, soothed Jenny with a glare of warning at Pal.
Anyway, we have a 3-week window. Newton is scheduled to discover gravity this autumn, while there are still apples in the trees in this, his family's orchard. One of the most important scientific discoveries ever leads to understanding that things fall downwards.
What? Are you saying nobody had noticed that before? Laughed Sean.
Well, yes, of course they had. but it was important that he noticed it when he did, because, you know, Jenny bit her well-indentured lip. Why all the subterfuge? Why didn't you just talk to him directly? Oh, Pao tried that. It didn't work. Why not? Pao, what did you say?
Oh, he asked me a silly question. Something about why is it that an apple will fall directly to the earth, and yet the moon does not.
And you said?
I can't remember exactly.
Didn't you say it was, began Jenny.
Look, Pao cut her off. It doesn't matter. Whatever it was that Newton discovered, I heard if it weren't for Newton, there would never have been a steam age, concluded Pao.
Why steam? Asked Jenny, trying dutifully to look impressed at Pao's great wisdom.
Well, that would be because he invented matches, shrugged Pao.
Yes, that must be it, agreed Jenny happily.
Matches? Exploded Sean.
Yes, said Pao.
In 1666?
1066, 1666, what's the difference?
600 years. What have matches got to do with falling apples? Logic nagged Sean.
Look, the Great Fire of London is due any day. See the connection now? Dismissed Pao loftily.
You don't actually know anything about history, do you? Sean stated more than asked.
Pao exploded.
Oh, shut up, you little interfering nematode! What did you have to come here for, anyway? And for that matter, why was your stupid watch on that stupid apple? What is this, some sort of Tree of Knowledge remake?
Well, who do you think you are, Adam and Eve?
Jenny and Pao looked at each other as if to say,
Now that's an idea.
Sean went on. Galileo and I were measuring how long it would take for a body to fall, but I didn't realize it was going to be my body. I fell off the Leaning Tower of Pisa just after the watch, which was strapped around an apple. Pao held the element of derise. Don't mistake this for interest, but why? We wanted to enter a team in the Summer Cannonball Olympics. No, I mean, why did you fall off? Although I like the concept.
Sean's face clouded over. Because Cespuglio came after us.
You and Galileo?
And Elf,
Sean added miserably.
Elf? Where is he?
They looked around.
He didn't make it. The Cardinal's men got him.
And you escaped. How very convenient.
Elf was trying to use the egg, and when they grabbed him, he let fly over the edge. I tried to catch it, but, you know, we forget that leaning towers have leaning floors, and I fell over the side with the apple. I guess the egg must have arrived just in front of me. It must have broken open, causing me to time jump instead of hitting the ground, and I came out here. I just feel so sorry for the person I was occupying. I guess he died because of me.
Pao shook his head. I hate to be the one to bring you consolation, but you didn't kill anyone. You're nowhere near that significant.
Jenny hushed him angrily. Sean, the Inquisition must have been hunting that person anyway. He was, let's say, scheduled to be terminated. That's how things work in this. We're not capable of changing the basics of the timeline.
It's called the TPF, said Pao with hurtful superiority. Time paradox failsafe, deciphered Jenny, when it was evident that Pao had forgotten what it meant. Sean remembered Stinto's famous last words, then said,
But how can you be so sure? Because history is always the same. Every time we come through, it is exactly the same as the last time. That can only mean we never caused changes.
But the watch, continued Sean, undaunted. You said yourselves that is different, and Cespuglio, and me for that matter.
Pao sat dejectedly on a milestone at the side of the road, reading,
London, 112 miles, mind ye the gap.
That's what I don't understand, he said, scratching his head under his wig with a twig. The watch must be changing history, accelerating progress, and yet every time we get to a new jump spot, it's as if the watch has just arrived, has never been in history before.
Jenny sat next to him, and he leant against her as she consoled him. Sean gave them a tranquil moment before throwing liquid hydrogen on the smouldering debate. So what's the problem? Pao stood up angrily, sending Jenny flying backwards as a blossom of petticoats. He towered over Sean menacingly, jabbing him with a finger in the chest.
The problem is, you little rat hitchhiker, is that our friends, Stinto, Amur, and Elf, have been captured by a megalomaniac by the name of Chespulio, who seems to always have a private army, and is always finding us by homing in on your watch. That's the problem. Sean stood his ground. Well, don't you see? That's exactly it. It's as if the watch were riding a wave of change, a wave that is racing forward, and we are just coming along for the ride.
So, what'll happen to the future? Asked Jenny, pulling Sean out of the firing line before Pau could launch his next digital missile, leaving him with a stab finger hovering in the air towards an attentive but not unduly impressed squirrel under the hedge. My guess is that there are two futures, went on Sean. The one we know, and a new one forming. The watch must be splitting the timeline in two around itself as it ploughs through, like an icebreaker or something. Pau made an honest enough effort to understand this, his face screwing up into something quite prunish, before he blew out the tension and said, But this is all crazy. He grasped Jenny's hand hard and looked pleadingly into her eyes. I just want everything to go back as it was. I know, cooed Jenny to calm him. It's all so difficult to understand. Pau reverted to the easier route of recrimination. Well, I understand this much. Sean Sulpier here is causing everything to go wrong.
If we could just get rid of him and the watch, everything would probably return to normal, and Stinto, Amur, and Elf will be waiting for us at Syracuse in -212 next time round, just like before. By get rid of, I hope you mean return home, demanded Jenny, bristling with shades of femme fatale.
Pau looked down and kicked the brother of the stone he had kicked before.
Yeah, sure. Home, safe, sure, that's what I meant.
He smiled submissively at Jenny, then sideways with malevolence for Sean's private consumption. Jenny took charge of the antler-locked males. But first, we have to get the watch back. Sean sighed.
Haven't we been through something like this already? He asked, postponing his thoughts to Roman assault craft and flaming catapult missiles.
The last time we tried to reset natural history manually, the watch disappeared to Egypt with John the Measurer, where it became the star attraction in a mathematics revival theater festival. Then the Romans, under Chespulio as every new emperor, invaded every country they could find to look for it. So, the Egyptians spirited it away on a 1400-year spree around the world, causing leaps of scientific and mathematical knowledge in Persia, India, and China, before it ended up in the Venetian Lagoon for 200 years with a horde of Mongols at its heels. This time will have to be more subtle.
Sean listened towards the house where the strains of maternal beratement had gone into stasis some time before. Getting the watch back from Newton is not going to be any easier.
He turned to Jenny and took her hands.
Why don't you do it? We can't.
Why not?
He won't listen to us. He thinks, began Pau. He thinks...
Yes? Asked Sean.
He thinks Pau is an idiot,
said Jenny, matter-of-factly, with an unconvincing, dismissive laugh.
Because of his answer to the gravity question. Why the apple falls but the moon does not.
Yes, 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 we've already been over that, Pau said hastily.
What was your answer, Pau? Sean insisted.
Don't change the subject. You were the one who gave Newton the watch. You are the one who will have to get it back before it does any more damage to the timeline.
And you? Sean took Jenny's hands again. Will you be waiting for me when I get back?
Jenny bit her lip as tears teased through her lashes.
I'm sorry, Sean, we can't. Now that Newton has been inspired, we have to move on. Why the rush? The future will wait. Well, Pau? Couldn't we wait at least a little while?
No, Jenny. Sean's not one of us. We have to continue on doing what we've always done. Only this way can we keep the timeline intact.
Jenny sighed and kissed and hugged Sean. I am sorry to leave you like this, Sean. Truly I am. Goodbye. Good luck, dear, dear boy. She turned sadly to join Pau.
Ready? He asked, holding up his egg.
Ready, she said, and held up hers.
Sean stepped forward.
But tell me, where do you find the eggs?
Oh, different places, replied Jenny. Oracles, diviners, fortune-tellers, alchemists, they all stock them.
They are rare, but there is a trade.
Some call them the philosopher's eggs.
Pow added, these ones I got from a baker in London in exchange for a box of matches. He's a part-time alchemist and is experimenting with natural gas heating.
That wouldn't happen to have been Pudding Lane, would it? Asked Sean suspiciously.
What's wrong with that? Shrugged Pow. Executioner's work in Die Agony Alley, civil servants in Memo Circle, legislators in Backhand Avenue, lawyers in Waffle Park, doctors in Autopsy Dead End, marriage agents in Piccadilly Circus. Why shouldn't bakers mix in Pudding Lane?
The eggs fell and broke, and they were gone, leaving two very surprised gentry folk looking at each other and at Sean, wondering what on earth they were doing there. The man Pow had been occupying turned and fled quickly down the road, the lady following, complaining in his wake. Isaac Newton came around the hedge behind which he had been hiding. He walked straight to the eggshells left by Jenny. What manner of witchcraft is this? I saw a figure, a soul, pass from that lady when the egg broke. A swirl of ether or perchance Descartes' vortex. Can you enlighten me? He said finally to Sean.
Mr. Isaac, we need to talk.
Newton collected the eggshells carefully in his handkerchief.
I see you are well versed in the modern slang. Call me Saki. I wish to examine an experiment on these eggshells. Can I prevail on you to accompany me to Cambridge, where I have my alchemy laboratory? There is the slight inconvenience of almost certain death from the plague.
But please tell me one thing, replied Sean. That man who has just left, what did he answer when you asked him why the moon does not fall to the earth while an apple does?
Because it is not a fruit.